Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present Curaçao Episode 3, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 9, The 1969 Curaçao Uprising, Flames of Resistance and Social Change. For centuries, Curaçao had been an island of contradictions, a place of wealth and poverty, of colonial rule and cultural resilience, of economic growth and racial inequality. Though the Dutch flag still flew over Willemstad in 1969, the people of Curaçao were no longer silent. The oil industry had brought prosperity, but that prosperity had not been shared equally. European elites, multinational corporations, and Dutch administrators controlled the island's economy, while the Afro-Curaçaoan working class struggled under low wages, discrimination, and deteriorating living conditions. For decades, the people of Curaçao had waited for meaningful change. In May 1969, they stopped waiting. What began as a workers' strike over wages and labor conditions erupted into the largest social revolt in Curaçao's history, shaking the very foundations of Dutch rule and forcing a reckoning with the island's colonial legacy. The streets of Willemstad burned. Protesters clashed with Dutch authorities. The government panicked. And the people of Curaçao sent a clear message to The Hague. We will no longer be second-class citizens in our own land. The road to revolution, a growing divide. The seeds of the 1969 uprising were planted long before the first Molotov cocktail was thrown. For much of the 20th century, Curaçao's economy had been dominated by Royal Dutch Shell, which operated one of the largest oil refineries in the world. The refinery, built in 1918, had transformed Willemstad into an industrial powerhouse, attracting thousands of workers from across the Caribbean, Latin America, and the Netherlands. But by the 1960s, the dream of prosperity had faded for many Curaçaoans. The oil industry had become exploitative. Black Curaçaoan workers were paid significantly less than Dutch and European employees, despite working under harsher conditions. Unemployment soared. As automation increased, fewer local workers were needed at the refinery, leaving many without jobs. Housing and infrastructure were neglected. The wealthy European and business elite lived comfortably in Punda and Charlu, while Afro-Curaçaoans lived in overcrowded, deteriorating neighborhoods like Otrobanda and Buena Vista. Dutch racism and economic control fueled resentment. Though slavery had ended a century earlier, racial and class divisions remained stark, with the Dutch elite controlling government, businesses, and institutions. For Curaçaoans, the colonial system had simply evolved. The chains had been removed, but the oppression remained. By May 1969, tensions had reached a breaking point. The working class was angry, desperate, and ready to fight for change. May 30, 1969, the day Curaçao erupted. The uprising began as a labor dispute. Workers at Workspoor Caribbean Company, a subsidiary of Royal Dutch Shell, demanded better wages and improved working conditions. When their demands were ignored, they went on strike, calling for a peaceful protest in Willemstad. At first, the march was orderly. Hundreds of oil workers, led by union leader Wilson Papagodit, gathered in Otrobanda, waving signs and chanting for fair wages. They marched toward Fort Amsterdam, the colonial government headquarters, expecting to be heard. But the Dutch authorities had other plans. Instead of listening, they called in riot police, armed with clubs and tear gas. When officers tried to forcefully disperse the crowd, the march turned into a battle. Rioters fought back. Workers picked up stones, sticks, and anything they could find, clashing with police in the streets. Buildings went up in flames. Businesses owned by Dutch elites were targeted first. Stores, government offices, and luxury hotels were set on fire. Willemstad descended into chaos. Looters raided warehouses, police fired tear gas, and protesters chanted for justice as the city burned. By nightfall, Willemstad was unrecognizable. Over 100 buildings had been burned or damaged. Looting had spread across Punda, Otrobanda, and Charlu. The Dutch colonial government lost control of the city. The people had spoken. Curaçao would never be the same again. The Dutch military intervention, a colonial response. As flames engulfed Willemstad, the Dutch government in The Hague panicked. Prime Minister Piet de Jong ordered an immediate military intervention, sending Dutch marines and heavily armed police to the island. The military crackdown was swift and brutal. Soldiers patrolled the streets, arresting suspected rioters and imposing a curfew. Protesters were beaten and detained. Union leaders, including Wilson Papagodit, were arrested and sentenced to prison for inciting violence. The Dutch government regained control, but at a cost. The uprising had shattered the illusion of stability in Curaçao. It exposed deep racial and economic injustices, forcing the Netherlands to confront the reality of its colonial policies. For the first time, the Dutch could no longer ignore the demand for change. The aftermath, the beginning of political change. Though the uprising was violently suppressed, its impact was irreversible. 1. Political reforms and greater autonomy. In the years following the riots, the Dutch government introduced political reforms, allowing Curaçao greater self-governance. In 1986, Aruba left the Netherlands Antilles, becoming a separate Dutch territory. By 2010, Curaçao gained country status within the Kingdom of the Netherlands, moving one step closer to full independence. 2. The rise of Afro-Curaçaoan political power. The 1969 uprising shifted political power away from the Dutch elite. Afro-Curaçaoan leaders gained influence, advocating for workers' rights and social justice. Figures like Wilson Papagodit, despite being arrested during the riots, became national heroes, inspiring a new generation of leaders. 3. A new labor movement. The riots empowered Curaçao's working class, leading to stronger unions, labor rights, and wage protections. Workers across the island demanded fair treatment, forcing businesses to increase wages and improve conditions. Despite these gains, economic struggles and racial disparities persisted, proving that the fight for true equality was far from over. The legacy of the 1969 uprising. Today, May 30th is remembered in Curaçao as a defining moment in its history. The uprising was not just a riot, it was a revolution in the making. It was a battle for dignity, for justice, for the right to exist as equals in their own land. It forced the Netherlands to rethink its colonial policies. It elevated the voices of Afro-Curaçaoans who had long been silenced. It set the stage for Curaçao's future push for independence. Though the flames of 1969 have long since burned out, the fire of resistance has never died. The struggle for economic justice, racial equality, and political autonomy continues to this day. But one thing is certain: Curaçao will never again be a silent colony. The people have spoken, and they will keep speaking. Chapter 10, Political Evolution, From Colony to Autonomy, 1954 to 2010. For over three centuries, Curaçao had been a colony under European rule, its destiny shaped by the ambitions of distant powers, Spain, Britain, and most notably the Dutch. But the events of the 20th century had forced a reckoning. From the end of slavery in 1863 to the 1969 uprising, the people of Curaçao had demanded their voices be heard. The process of decolonization had begun across the world. Empires were collapsing, colonies were breaking free, and even in the Dutch Caribbean, change was inevitable. The Netherlands could no longer justify holding on to Curaçao as a colony, but it was also unwilling to grant full independence. For decades, Curaçao's political status shifted, evolved, and sparked fierce debate. Would it remain part of the Netherlands? Would it gain full independence like Suriname in 1975? Or would it carve out a new kind of autonomy, balancing self-rule with economic stability under the Dutch kingdom? The road to self-governance was long, complicated, and filled with political struggles. But on October 10, 2010, Curaçao finally became an autonomous country within the Kingdom of the Netherlands. A victory for some, a compromise for others. This is the story of how Curaçao transformed from a colony to a self-governing nation. The 1954 Charter, the birth of the Netherlands Antilles. The first major step toward autonomy came on December 15, 1954, when the Netherlands signed the Charter for the Kingdom of the Netherlands. This charter established the Netherlands Antilles, a federation of six Dutch Caribbean islands. Curaçao, Aruba, Bonaire, St. Martin, St. Eustatius, Saba. Under this new arrangement, the Netherlands Antilles was granted a degree of self-governance, with its own local parliament and government. The Dutch government retained control over defense, foreign policy, and constitutional matters. Curaçao, as the largest and most economically important island, became the political and administrative center of the federation. For many Curaçaoans, this was a step forward, but for others, it was not enough. True independence was still out of reach, and the Dutch still held ultimate control over the island's fate. The push for greater autonomy, political tensions, and division. By the 1970s, many in Curaçao began calling for more political and economic independence. But there was a division. Not everyone agreed on the future of the island. Some wanted full independence, arguing that Curaçao should follow the example of Suriname, which had become independent from the Netherlands in 1975. Others feared economic instability, believing that Curaçao was too small to survive on its own without Dutch financial support. The Dutch government was hesitant, worried that full independence would lead to economic collapse and political instability. Meanwhile, tensions between the islands of the Netherlands Antilles were growing. Aruba, in particular, wanted to separate from Curaçao and govern itself independently. In 1986, Aruba officially left the Netherlands Antilles, becoming a separate, autonomous country within the Kingdom of the Netherlands, a move known as the Status Apart. This weakened the Netherlands Antilles, raising questions about whether the remaining islands should also seek individual autonomy. Curaçao now faced a critical choice. Would it remain part of the Netherlands Antilles, or would it follow Aruba's path toward greater self-rule? The collapse of the Netherlands Antilles, the 2005 referendum. Throughout the 1990s and early 2000s, the Netherlands Antilles was in political turmoil. The islands had different economic and political interests, and many felt that the federation no longer made sense. In 2005, the people of Curaçao voted in a referendum to decide their future. The options were: remain part of the Netherlands Antilles, become a fully independent country, become an autonomous country within the Kingdom of the Netherlands, become a direct part of the Netherlands as an overseas municipality. The results were clear. 68% of Curaçaoans voted for autonomy within the Dutch kingdom, following the same path as Aruba. Full independence was rejected, largely due to economic concerns and a lack of infrastructure for self-sufficiency. The Netherlands Antilles, after nearly 60 years, was officially dissolved. On October 10, 2010, Curaçao became an autonomous country within the Kingdom of the Netherlands, alongside Aruba and St. Martin. What does autonomy mean? The 2010 status change. Curaçao's new status in 2010 was a political compromise, a middle ground between independence and colonial rule. Under this agreement, Curaçao now had its own government, parliament, and prime minister. The Dutch government still controlled defense, foreign affairs, and parts of the judicial system. The Netherlands provided financial oversight, ensuring Curaçao did not fall into economic mismanagement. Curaçao was no longer part of the Netherlands Antilles, allowing it to govern itself separately. For some Curaçaoans, this was a victory, a chance to chart their own path while still benefiting from Dutch economic and military support. For others, it was a disappointment, a sign that true independence was still out of reach. Challenges of autonomy: a new beginning or a new struggle. Though Curaçao was now an autonomous country, independence came with significant challenges. Economic dependence on the Netherlands. Curaçao still relied on Dutch aid, particularly during financial crises. The Dutch imposed strict economic regulations, limiting the government's ability to borrow and spend freely. Political corruption and instability. In the years following 2010, Curaçao saw frequent changes in government, with political parties accused of corruption and mismanagement. Leaders like Helman Wiels, a vocal supporter of full independence, were assassinated, adding to the political instability. A divided population. Many Curaçaoans felt that autonomy had not improved their daily lives. Unemployment remained high, crime increased, and poverty persisted. Younger generations continued to migrate to the Netherlands, seeking better opportunities. The question of full independence. Some leaders still pushed for complete separation from the Netherlands, arguing that Curaçao should be fully sovereign. Others warned that without Dutch support, the island would struggle economically and politically. Curaçao had gained self-rule, but the fight for true self-determination was far from over. The legacy of autonomy, what comes next? Since 2010, Curaçao has continued to navigate the challenges of being a small, semi-independent nation. The island has strengthened its own governance, built stronger ties with its Caribbean neighbors, and sought economic diversification beyond oil and tourism. Yet the debate continues. Should Curaçao push for full independence, or is autonomy within the Dutch kingdom the best solution? Can the island achieve economic self-sufficiency, or will it always rely on Dutch financial aid? What does true freedom look like for Curaçao? For now, the future remains uncertain. But one thing is clear. Curaçao is no longer just a colony. It is a nation defining its own destiny. Chapter 11. Curaçao's Cultural Renaissance, Language, Music, and Identity. For centuries, Curaçao has been more than just a strategic port or a colonial possession. It has been a cultural crossroads, a place where languages, traditions, and peoples have fused into something unique and powerful. Born from African resilience, European influence, Caribbean rhythm, and Latin American vibrancy, Curaçao's culture has been shaped by history, struggle, and triumph. Though the Dutch once sought to impose their language, their customs, and their rule, Curaçaoans crafted their own identity, one that could not be erased. From the cadence of Papiamentu, to the soulful sounds of tambu and tumba, to the vibrant festivals that celebrate both African and European traditions, Curaçao's cultural renaissance is a story of pride, resistance, and an unbreakable spirit. This is the story of how Curaçao reclaimed its identity, through language, through music, and through the power of cultural expression. Papiamentu, the language of the people. To understand Curaçao's identity, one must first understand Papiamentu. More than just a language, Papiamentu is a symbol of resistance, survival, and unity. It emerged during the colonial era, when enslaved Africans from different regions, speaking different native tongues, had to find a way to communicate with each other, with their Dutch overseers, and with the Sephardic Jewish traders who played a major role in the island's commerce. The birth of Papiamentu. The language blends elements of African languages, Spanish, Portuguese, Dutch, Arawakan, and even some French and English. It developed as a means of survival, a way for the enslaved to understand their masters while secretly maintaining their own linguistic heritage. Over time, Papiamentu became the dominant language of the island, spoken by enslaved, free Afro-Curaçaoans, Jewish merchants, and even Dutch settlers. A language once suppressed. For centuries, the Dutch tried to suppress Papiamentu, viewing it as a slave language unfit for education, business, or governance. Schools were required to teach in Dutch, forcing children to abandon their native tongue in formal settings. Government documents and official proceedings were conducted in Dutch, excluding Papiamentu speakers from political participation. The ruling class saw Papiamentu as a dialect of the uneducated, failing to recognize its depth and complexity. A language reclaimed. But Curaçaoans never let go of their language. In the 20th century, Papiamentu gained greater recognition as poets, authors, and musicians began embracing it in literature and music. In 2007, Papiamentu was finally recognized as an official language of Curaçao, alongside Dutch and English. Today, Papiamentu is a source of national pride, a language that represents the soul of Curaçaoan identity, not imposed by colonizers but forged by the people. Nos idioma, nos orgullo. Our language, our pride. Music, the rhythm of resilience. If Papiamentu is Curaçao's voice, music is its heartbeat. Curaçaoan music is deeply rooted in African tradition, influenced by the sounds of the Caribbean, Latin America, and Europe. It tells stories of struggle, of faith, of celebration, and of resistance. Tambu, the voice of the enslaved. Tambu, often called the heartbeat of Curaçao, is more than just a genre. It is a sacred tradition. Born from African drumming and spiritual practices, tambu was used by the enslaved to communicate, celebrate, and resist oppression. The Dutch feared tambu, believing it could incite rebellion. For centuries, it was banned, but the music never stopped. Even today, tambu is performed with deep spiritual meaning, featuring drums, call and response singing, and dance that connects Curaçaoans to their African heritage. Tumba, the sound of celebration. Tumba, a more modern evolution of Curaçaoan music, is joyful, energetic, and deeply tied to carnival. It blends African, Latin, and Caribbean influences, creating an infectious rhythm that commands people to dance. Every year, the Tumba Festival crowns the best Tumba song, which becomes the official anthem of carnival. Tumba is not just music. It is a statement of identity, a way for Curacaoans to express their pride, humor, and history. SCU, honoring the land. SCU, also known as the Harvest Festival Music, is a tribute to Curacao's agricultural roots. Traditionally performed during the harvest season, SCU features traditional instruments, African-inspired drumming, and dance that mimics the act of farming. Though Curacao is no longer an agricultural society, SCU lives on in festivals and cultural celebrations. Modern influences, the fusion of old and new. Curacaoan music continues to evolve, blending traditional sounds with modern genres like reggae and dancehall, influenced by Jamaica, Latin rhythms drawing from salsa, merengue, and bachata, Afrobeat and hip-hop, reflecting Curacao's deep African heritage and global musical connections. Music in Curacao is not just entertainment. It is history, it is resistance, it is identity. Festivals, celebrating freedom and identity. Curacao's festivals are a reflection of its cultural richness, where music, dance, and tradition come alive in full color. Curacao Carnival, the grandest celebration. Carnival in Curacao is the most anticipated event of the year, a spectacular display of lavish costumes that blend African, Caribbean, and European influences. Tumba music, with its lively beats and powerful lyrics. Massive parades, bringing thousands into the streets to dance and celebrate. Carnival is more than just a party. It is a symbol of freedom. Once, enslaved Africans were denied the right to celebrate. Today, Curacaoans celebrate without restraint. SCU Festival, honoring the ancestors. Every April, the SCU Festival brings Curacaoans together to celebrate their agricultural and African heritage. Participants dress in traditional clothing, playing drums and instruments that echo the past. The festival is a way to honor those who came before, recognizing the resilience of Curacao's ancestors. Dia de Bandera, Curacao's Flag Day. On July 2nd, Curacaoans celebrate their national flag, a symbol of autonomy, history, and cultural pride. The day is filled with parades, traditional music, and cultural performances. It is a moment to reflect on how far the island has come and the strength of its people. The power of culture, a nation defined by its people. Curacao's cultural identity has never been dictated by colonizers, governments, or outside forces. It has been shaped by the people, their language, their music, their traditions. Papiamentu, once suppressed, is now a language of pride and unity. Music, once feared by colonizers, is now a powerful symbol of heritage. Festivals, once restricted, are now celebrations of freedom. Curacao is not just an island. It is a living, breathing culture, a fusion of the past and the future, an anthem of resilience and joy. And through language, music, and tradition, its people will continue to shape their destiny. Chapter 12, Tourism, Economy, and the Challenges of the 21st Century. Curacao, once a strategic outpost of colonial trade and empire building, has transformed into a modern Caribbean nation navigating the complexities of globalization. No longer solely dependent on the oil industry or international trade, Curacao has embraced tourism, finance, and technology as pillars of its economy. But along with opportunity comes new challenges: economic inequality, environmental threats, political uncertainty, and the question of how to balance development with preserving the island's cultural identity. As Curacao steps further into the 21st century, it faces critical questions. How can it diversify its economy while maintaining sustainability? Can it compete globally while protecting the interests of its local population? What does true economic independence look like for an island still partially reliant on Dutch financial support? The answers to these questions will determine Curacao's future, not just as a destination for tourists, but as a nation shaping its own destiny. The shift to tourism, a new economic engine. For much of the 20th century, Curacao's economy revolved around the oil refinery industry, with Royal Dutch Shell operating one of the largest refineries in the Caribbean. But as the oil market fluctuated and technology reduced the need for human labor, Curacao needed a new source of economic growth. The rise of tourism, 1990s-present. By the 1990s, Curacao, like many other Caribbean nations, began expanding its tourism industry, recognizing that its pristine beaches, colonial architecture, and rich culture could attract international visitors. Cruise ships began docking regularly in Willemstad, bringing thousands of tourists each year. The government invested heavily in resort developments, casinos, and beachfront hotels. International marketing efforts positioned Curaçao as a unique destination, distinct from other Caribbean islands. Unlike islands such as Aruba or the Dominican Republic, which focused on mass tourism, Curaçao aimed to attract a mix of luxury travelers, cultural explorers, and ecotourists. Strengths of Curaçao's tourism industry. A unique cultural blend. Unlike many other tourist destinations, Curaçao offers a fusion of Dutch, Caribbean, and Latin American influences, reflected in its food, music, and history. Diverse attractions. From historical sites like Willemstad's UNESCO-listed Punda and Otrobanda districts to natural wonders like Christoffel National Park and the Blue Room Cave, Curaçao offers more than just beaches. Year-round appeal. Unlike hurricane-prone Caribbean destinations, Curaçao sits outside the hurricane belt, making it a year-round travel destination. Challenges facing tourism. Despite its growth, Curaçao's tourism industry faces several challenges. Competition from larger destinations. Curaçao competes with Aruba, the Dominican Republic, and Jamaica, which attract more visitors due to their larger hotel infrastructure and global recognition. Economic leakage. Much of the tourism revenue goes to foreign-owned resorts and cruise lines, rather than staying within the local economy. Environmental concerns. Increased tourism places stress on Curaçao's fragile marine ecosystems, particularly its coral reefs and coastal habitats. To ensure long-term sustainability, Curaçao must balance economic growth with environmental conservation and local community involvement. The financial sector, banking, offshore business, and digital innovation. Beyond tourism, Curaçao has become a regional financial hub, particularly in the offshore banking and international business sectors. Offshore banking and financial services. Curaçao's favorable tax laws and stable banking system have attracted international investors looking for offshore banking opportunities. The island hosts several international banks, insurance companies, and investment firms. Curaçao's financial services sector contributes significantly to GDP, helping diversify the economy beyond tourism. Challenges facing the financial sector. Increased global regulations. Many nations have cracked down on offshore tax havens, making it harder for Curaçao to maintain its competitive advantage in international banking. Economic dependence. The financial sector is vulnerable to global economic downturns and shifting regulations. Digital innovation and the future of finance. To stay competitive, Curaçao has explored digital innovation, including cryptocurrency and blockchain technologies. Some local businesses have begun accepting digital currencies, and there have been discussions about creating a regulatory framework for crypto-based finance. Fintech expansion. Curaçao is working to modernize its banking systems to attract tech-based financial firms. If Curaçao can successfully navigate regulatory challenges while embracing technological advancements, it could become a leader in digital finance in the Caribbean. Economic inequality and social challenges. Despite its economic progress, many Curaçaoans continue to struggle. Unemployment and wage gaps. Curaçao has a high unemployment rate, particularly among young people, many of whom seek work in the Netherlands. Many jobs in the tourism and service industry offer low wages, leading to economic disparities between the wealthy and working-class populations. Dutch financial oversight, a blessing or a burden? Since gaining autonomy in 2010, Curaçao has struggled with debt and financial mismanagement. The Dutch government provides financial aid, but also imposes strict economic regulations, limiting Curaçao's ability to make independent financial decisions. Some Curaçaoans view Dutch oversight as necessary for stability, while others see it as a continuation of colonial influence. The debate continues. Should Curaçao seek full independence, or does remaining under Dutch financial protection ensure a stronger economy? Environmental concerns, balancing development with sustainability. As Curaçao develops, its environment faces increasing threats from tourism, industrial expansion, and climate change. Coral reef destruction and marine conservation. Curaçao's coral reefs are among the most biodiverse in the Caribbean, attracting divers and marine researchers. However, rising ocean temperatures, pollution, and irresponsible tourism threaten these ecosystems. Renewable energy versus fossil fuels. The Isla refinery, once a major employer, has become a source of pollution, leading to health concerns and environmental degradation. Curaçao has invested in renewable energy projects, such as solar and wind farms, but remains dependent on fossil fuels for much of its energy supply. The challenge is clear. How can Curaçao achieve economic growth without sacrificing its natural beauty and resources? The future, what lies ahead for Curaçao? As Curaçao moves deeper into the 21st century, it faces several critical crossroads. Tourism versus sustainability. Can Curaçao expand its tourism industry without damaging its environment and culture? Financial autonomy versus Dutch support. Should Curaçao push for full independence, or is it better off remaining part of the Dutch kingdom? Economic diversification. How can Curaçao reduce its reliance on tourism and offshore finance, while creating more local job opportunities? Climate change and environmental protection. What steps can Curaçao take to protect its ecosystems while embracing modern development? Curaçao stands at a pivotal moment in its history. It has survived colonial rule, economic transitions, and social upheaval. Now, it must shape a future that benefits all of its people, not just a privileged few. With its rich culture, strategic location, and resilient population, Curaçao has the potential to become a model for sustainable economic growth in the Caribbean. The question is, will it rise to the challenge?